You are listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond, where hosts from the LCC Library sit down with writers, publishers, entrepreneurs, and literary enthusiasts of all types. Join your hosts, Amy Ewell, Robin Moore, John Salaichi, and Abby Tebow as we explore the very heart of the written word.
Welcome to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. I'm Amy Ewald, and I'm joined by my co-host, Robin Moore. And today, we're thrilled to have a very special returning guest who is a writer, producer, filmmaker, and also an LCC alumni. Welcome to the show, Jesse Edwards.
Hey, thank you for having me. Amy, Robin, this is awesome.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you're back.
Yes, we're happy to have you back. And today we're going to dive into Jesse's latest film, The Wild Man of Shaggy Creek, which he is the writer, director, producer. I think he's got all the credits on that.
Yes.
So give us a little rundown about The Wild Man of Shaggy Creek.
Well, you know it's based on a book. And I met the author at the Utah Film Festival when I was there for Stolen Valley, which is what we got to talk about last year.
Last time, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was out there doing the festival tour and I met him and he's got kids. And I said something about how I had kids. And he goes, hey, I've got a kid's book that I wrote. Show it to your kids. See if they like it. And it's got this monster on the front. And I'm like, what is this? You know, I didn't grow up with Goosebumps or, you know, movies like that. A lot of people did and they love them. So before I gave it to my 10-year-old, I'm like, I'm going to read this first. I'm like, this is actually pretty good. And so a year later, I was working on another project. When the funding for it fell through, I was like, man, I got to make something this year. And I was in my driveway looking at the woods that surround our house. And I'm like, I think I could shoot that wild man thing here. So I don't really love horror films. There are some really good ones. And this is about as close as I feel like I'd want to get to making a really scary movie. It's funny. It's sweet. It's got a very uplifting and heartfelt ending. But it has that suspense that, you know, drives the plot and drives the characters forward and and just asks the question, you know, is this Bigfoot monster real? And the kids have to play detective and try to figure that out for the film.
Wow. So it's definitely, it is a loosely a horror movie, yeah. Right?
It's
but
like
it's a family.
It's family fantasy is the genre. And that's what E.T. was. Goonies is kind of like that.
I love Goonies, one of my favorites.
Yes.
Almost wore my Goonies shirt today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I was thinking that, and I looked at it in the drawer, I'm like, yeah, this movie's kind of seems along that line, you know? Yeah.
Yeah,
kind of if you're a fan of Goosebumps and that series.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the Goosebumps movie is, I think, way more dramatic and intense than Wild Man ever gets. I don't know if y'all have seen that. I've just seen the trailer.
Yeah.
They did a live action remake. It looked pretty pretty tense. And, you know, that's one of the challenges of adapting books to film is where do you push the envelope? Where do you make it more visually intense? Or where do you just keep it in their head? Because in books, you have access to the protagonist's mind and their thoughts. And you can do a lot of, is it that? Or is it not that? Or is it that? Or is it? On film, you have to show it.
Yeah.
So you have to make a choice. You know, what are they seeing? What are they not seeing?
And how did you do that? How did you make those choices?
Well,
did you write the screenplay now on this?
So I worked with Rob York, wrote the book. His pen name is R.H. Grimley. So if you look it up, that's what you see. And he's actually done a series. I think he has 12 of them or 8 of them in a 16-book series that he's still finishing. They're really cool. So he had a teleplay of the book, like 50 pages, that he had tried to develop years before. And so he sent that to me, and I adapted that to a full-length feature. It was very fun because the core of the plot and how it starts, you know, the problems they face and where it goes, that was all done. And I just got to embellish and really just add a lot of what I'm passionate about into the character's development throughout it. So I got to add more dialogue scenes. I got to add some more family conflict, some more conflict with the friends. And just, you know, flesh out what was already a really great premise.
I love that because I was going to ask you, what deeper themes does the film explore behind the legend itself? So you sort of answered that.
Yeah. I mean, my wife said something funny. she's like, so what's this thing about? And I'm like, well, it's about this, like, you know, this boy who's like afraid of the woods and he's afraid of going out into them by himself and doing something that's really hard. And she's like, yeah, that doesn't sound familiar. And I'm like, what? And the context of that is this was the first movie that I was producing solely on my own. I was a part of a bigger production company with my last film.
Yeah.
And so me stepping into the woods was like the unknown of like, I don't have all of the partners I had before. And I'm going out on a big limb here and really starting over with the team that I'm able to bring together to make the film. So, and no, and, you know, that's not to say this was made by myself at all. No mm-hmm. film can be, really. It's a team sport. You have to have a lot of people in it. But I was starting a brand new team, you know, yeah. and starting over there.
It sounds like it's kind of you challenged yourself a little yeah. bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You started to list some of the credits earlier yeah. and I'm like, yeah. it's too many because yeah. it's really hard. But, you know, I think you have to do the best you can with what you have, with where you are. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of excuses that you will make as an artist. Oh, it's not the right time, or I'm doing too much. Like the prep time's too short. We're moving too fast. Those are the voices I had to fight against and just say, no, like this is what we have and we're going to make the best of it and move forward. So because that's what I was facing, that became a lot of the theme in the script of what the main character deals with mm-hmm. is he's like, oh, I can't, you know, he has all these reasons why he shouldn't take up a bully on a dare and camp in the woods overnight. Mm-hmm. And that's what's sweet about it. That is an innocent, like, he goes and gets his little tent mm-hmm. and his backpack yeah. and he marches yeah. out into the wind. And it's a very sweet thing that he does, but that it's making that with the music and the score and the cinematography and all of the opposition that we put on the character beforehand and showing how scared he can be of the woods. It's making that moment as big as possible.
Yeah.
So it has the weight of like, he's risking everything, you know, to go into these woods.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the music, because I know that you're also a musician.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So I know you put a little extra into
yes.
that, or really have the ear for it. So let's tell
yes.
us about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I put a lot of heart into it. It's one of my favorite parts of the process. And I've worked with a lot of composers on a lot of commercials. My other film I've done, a lot of bigger budget documentary projects for National Geographic, ESPN,
oh, yeah.
and all those projects had a lot more money behind them. So I was going to all the composers who I've worked with before, and I'm like, here's the project, here's what it is. And it's hard everywhere financially right now. And I got a lot of like, man, I love working with you, but I can't come on for this budget. I was in a pinch with the music. It was one of the last positions that we locked in. But thank goodness a friend of a friend had introduced me to a guy who knew another guy. This was like, so I was worried. I'm like, this is too many, you know.
Well, it's all about networking, right?
Like
and who you know, who knows somebody, who knows, you know.
Yeah.
This was way down the line. And sometimes that's great, and sometimes it's not so great. This one was fantastic.
Wonderful.
Jose Skirchley, I met through Zoom. He lives in Mexico. He is brilliant. He teaches at a university.
Mm-hmm.
He's very kind. He's very humble. He's very soft-spoken. And we were going through the first call and I'm like, man, I'm not. And then he sent the first link over and I was like, I'm not sure this is quite right. And I sent along a bunch of feedback and I'm like, we'll see how this goes. Because our other option was trying to sort together a stock music for the, I don't like doing that.
Yeah.
I don't like,
yeah.
It can be done. I've done, but for a film, like it should be original, I think, to the story, to the film. What he did with the feedback was the best response I've seen to direction ever, working mm-hmm. with a composer. That's a huge deal. Like if you've done, like worked with the composer, worked with an artist, trying to communicate, here's an idea, here's what I want from this. We talked about my musical background. I can be unhelpfully specific sometimes because I understand a little bit of music theory. So I'll say like, hey, I think this should be like a half cadence, you know, like end on like a 5 chord. Like this needs to let us feel like we're not quite resolved yet.
Yeah.
And I've said that to some people and they do exactly what I say. And they say, there's your half cadence, Jesse. And, you know, it's kind of like, why are you talking? He was never like that. He always tried the suggestions I had. If they worked well, awesome. If they didn't work well, he worked harder to make them work well. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's one thing to be like, oh, I took your note and it doesn't work. So, but it's another like, I took your note, but it also needed this, this, and this for the half cadence to work. So let me try that. That was Jose. He just had, he had the most humble spirit and collaborative spirit in the music. And we did the whole thing over Zoom in like 2 weeks.
Oh my God. Wow.
And it's all, and he released the whole thing on Spotify. You can listen to it. And it's, it's honest. He won best score at the Los Angeles Film Awards up against a lot of other film projects.
All right.
For this film?
For Wild Man.
Wow.
Yes. Great. Yeah. That's awesome.
Maybe I should have led with that, but I was lost in the half cadence story. I don't know. That story just means so much to me because he didn't know me and he didn't have to like work on it for such a low budget or work as hard, but he's never done a film. And it was one of those things where the opportunity aligned with the dream.
Yes. I love that.
And he was willing to pour into it. And I think we made something really special together because of it.
Yeah, that's the key. The opportunity aligned with the dream, your dream. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
Well, in his, in this case.
Yeah, yeah,
because I was saying, hey, I have the opportunity. I have a little bit of money, but more than the money, I have the film that's been shot and I've got distributors interested and it's ready to go. It just, it needs its soul, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I think the score brings.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was a very true collaboration. And when it wins an award like that, too, then you kind of know, like, yes, this, because when you collaborate, I think it always makes things better, right, in a true collaboration like that.
So, yeah. And the fact that he got an award for it, that says
a lot. That's awesome.
So, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
That's so cool.
Congratulations. Thank you. Yeah, I'm very proud of it.
Yeah. I'm so excited about the film.
I know. So what, tell us a little bit more. What was, like, the biggest challenge that you faced in filming or in writing? Or
man, there's so many.
Weather,
what are you most
access?
Interested in, the actual shoot side or
like tell us where it was filmed.
Can you say your neighborhood?
Well, yeah, I was looking at my at my backyard. Yes, which isn't, it's not, you know,
You didn't film the movie back there?
We filmed a couple of pickups there.
Okay.
Because there's a few trees. There's like, I don't know, 20 yards of trees between our house and then the other house. Like, you know, in the winter, you could see another house. In the summer, fall, or you can't, which is nice because the trees come in. So that story about seeing it and thinking we could do that, that was the inspiration that got me going, which honestly might be the hardest part of the entire thing is like giving yourself that green light. This was a self-funded project. So for me, it was that risk of like, I have to put the money up for this and this has to work. And I'm in a lot of trouble if it doesn't. Right. Like, you know, like we were saying about that boy walking out into the woods. Like, I was feeling that.
That was you.
I was like, geez. So I think that initial green light is the hard. But then once it was like, okay, we are going to do this. And my friend Rachel Helton from New York, she was my art director on The Stolen Valley. So she was somebody who I had worked with before who was coming on in a much bigger role on this film, going from art director to managing, you know, several other department heads. So she was line producer and co-producer of the film, first AD. She did production design. Pretty much everyone who was on it had like four or five different roles that they had to help with. But she was the first person that I hired for all of the prep. Mm. And so that was a very like, okay, this is happening moment. But as soon as I did that and was willing to like start spending money and get the wheels moving, I was like, oh, I don't want to shoot this in my backyard. Like, we can beat that, you know? This should be big and grand and dramatic and, you know, all the things that, you know, I said about setting up the opposition so your hero looks great. Like, they're only as good as the obstacles that they overcome.
That's right.
So if there's 20 yards of trees, you know, but if it's, you know, 2,000, you know, acres of foggy, dark, dense woods, and he can barely even see his hand in front of him.
Yes.
And then he hears a lion growling or bear, or is it a wolf?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. We used all of those animals, by the way, to combine and make the sound, which was kind of crazy. I don't know. Have you seen these like behind the scenes sound designs of what they do in Star Wars
for
like the Rancor?
I just got to tour the Warner Brothers studio out in LA.
Oh, so
and
cool.
Yeah. There's a name for it too, of like those sounds and the recording, you know, when they
Foley
were
artists, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. And they had a couple different things that you could look at and listen to of them doing
it's
that.
Just so unbelievable. Like
it's
the different
really cool
animals and really scrapes cool. and metal that they combine, you know, to make these, you know, really dramatic, you know, fictional sounds, yeah. Sounds because yeah. They're not real.
Right.
So yeah, we got a very big state park, I think, or city park. I'm not sure now. It's called Oaklands Park. It's down in Murfreesboro, and it's about 30 minutes south of where I live in Nashville. And then there's a school down there. We shot it, and then we spent a long time reaching out to houses through Zillow, people who are selling their homes. Mm-hmm. And we talked to a lot of owners we knew, too, but nobody had the perfect fit because we needed a house that was very pretty and nice and looked like a family's moved from California to Nashville mm-hmm. to relocate, which is very common there. It's like everyone you meet like is from California and moved 2 weeks ago. It needed to look great and nice, but then needed to be just surrounded by trees.
Yeah.
In the story, it's, you know, the Shaggy Creek woods are the only thing between the home and the school. And so when they're down a car or when it rains, there's a couple different pinch points where we kind of force him into, like, the only way to get out is to go through those woods.
And
he hates it. So we had, those are our three locations, the school, the house, the woods that were there were really good. But then we got Oaklands Park for mm-hmm. those big wide shots. And it was a lot of hiking in with a lot of stuff. The hardest thing is the lawnmower fogger, which is basically like a huge generator with a couple wheels and a metal handle that's hanging on for dear life. And you got to pull that thing in and it kicks out so much fog.
Wow.
And then you have to hope that the wind cooperates. But that's how you get those, like, you know, Indiana Jones, like mm-hmm. Jurassic yeah. Park. You know, we got the rays of light coming through and it's dense and it's dark. That's how we got all of that stuff.
Wow.
It evolved and grew as it should.
Right.
You know, it's but you have to get going.
Mm-hmm. You got to start somewhere, huh?
You do. Yeah. Absolutely.
Even if it's just the backyard, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's funny because that was one of our last, like when we needed to finish the script, there was a pickup from when he falls and, you know, thinks he sees, I can't tell you what, he falls and thinks he sees a thing. And we needed a couple more shots of that. And this is while we were in post. Yeah. And it was like, well, we can't get everybody and go. But I'm like, well, if it's just, you know, here, we actually can do that in the backyard. So we reach back out and you brought everybody over. And, yeah.
I'm thinking about the casting.
It's a great cast.
It's a great cast. So how did you find your cast? I mean, how did that come about?
We got the ball rolling and we reached out to all the agencies I've worked with mm-hmm. before. They had some people. We have like a sample script mm-hmm. that we send to everybody with a character description. Mm-hmm. And then we do like everybody submits their auditions through their agent or directly through us. Cause we do like Facebook posts or backstage.
Oh,
and it's a very much like a shotgun blast, like get what we need out to as many people as possible and try to get them to just submit one thing that we can look at, which is like a 30 to 60 second clip. Like, hi, here's my name. Yeah. And I'm reading for Scott. And then it goes black and then it comes back up and they say the lines from a scene and that's it. And you know, pretty quick, usually before they're even reading the script, is this a fit or is it not?
Yeah. So the main character, the little boy. So is that his first time?
Oh,
wow.
That's his first film.
His first film. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And he's done some, like a lot of them do, like, you know, theater, musical. They have, they all have experience. Otherwise they wouldn't be wanting to audition for it.
So was it a little different working with younger actors like that?
Yeah. You know, than older.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, they're just, everybody's still a kid at some point. We all just have different baggage that we've picked up along the way. I think the biggest noteworthy piece is the enthusiasm. I mean, they're not jaded at all.
Oh.
They haven't been burned.
Yeah.
And it's so sweet.
Yeah.
It's kind of like contagious.
Makes it easy.
it makes it easy to stay excited and positive about what you're doing. Whereas when you work really hard on developing a script and a project and a film and you're afraid and you aren't sure how you're going to do it and you feel alone and you reach out and people come and then it's still super hard and you work for months and then you get up to the day and the person's like, all you have is light roast coffee.
Where's the snack?
It's like
we don't get steak tonight.
Where's the craft services?
Yeah.
Can we send someone out for some sushi?
Yeah. Right.
I can't eat that. We're like, oh, we said we were having these sandwiches. I can't eat that.
And the kids are like, can we just get some popcorn?
The kids are just stoked. They're just so happy. There's none of that. There's no ego there.
And what an opportunity for them.
Huge.
Thanks for offering that.
It's really big. And all of them seem to get that, which was really special, you know, because you work with some kids who they just expect it. And that was not any of these kids.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That's cool.
It is. Yeah. I'm so excited for it.
Are there, when you're creating a film, though, that is for family or a family film?
Yeah.
Again, is there different considerations than when you're creating like more a mature audience versus a family, like in your choices and directing, your choices in the writing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest changes were in the writing and were in the conflict that was presented.
Yeah.
Because I think what you lean towards is, and what you should lean towards, is make this as hard as possible on your main character, you know, so their choices are even more brave, and that, you know, you develop more empathy and for the character, you know, from the audience. And you have to draw the line, like you said, like you can't, I don't want the mom or dad like just berating the child, shaming him, for example, in a more mature movie, you may have a main character with an abusive, traumatic history with their parents. That has no place in a PG.
Yeah.
You know, well, if you tell me you think there's a monster again, I'm getting my belt out.
Yeah.
No way. Right. Yeah, I know. And it has no place. But in some, you know, but then you think of Forrest Gump, which is like a PG-13 film, the character and the scene where they go sit at the house and she's running from her dad, who's like chasing her.
Whew.
And it makes you feel something.
Yes.
And that's done so tastefully and it's done so well. But that's not, you don't show that to your 8-year-old.
No.
And say, you know, check it out.
Yeah.
Look how good this is. So you have to make those choices.
Yeah.
And
I can remember being a kid and my parents took me to see the movie Gremlins. Remember Gremlins?
That movie freaked me out.
Yeah. And they, I can remember driving home. It was in the winter time too. And I'm in the back seat and my parents were like, is she going to be okay after watching that movie? And like, they were so concerned because it was it was kind of scary for my age, you know?
But, and this was hard for me because I have kids that, my eldest doesn't like scary stuff at all.
Yeah.
My girls are 10 and 8. And, my 10-year-old's like, I don't want to see that. Or she'll want to hide. And if I saw like just this trailer or just this poster for this film, this isn't one where I'd say, oh, come and like, look at this. Doesn't this look fun? So it was an interesting project for me in that sense, because it's not a typical one that like our family would even go to and watch. But I think what alignment moments, because the opportunity is like my friend Rob saying like, hey, here's a book. I'd be excited to help work on it for you to make a movie from it if you wanted to. And then the dream is to make movies that matter, that can connect us with who we are and who we're meant to be, who we're becoming. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. And so to make this is a family fantasy, like gateway horror film. It leads people into what horror would be. But to make it a movie with redemption, with good, healthy family dynamics, with parents that help guide their children through conflict, with friends who are willing to sacrifice for each other and, you know, learn how to love each other in the face of the unknown. How beautiful is that?
Yeah.
So that's what excites me about it. And that's what I've come to love about The Wild Man of Shaggy Creek.
I love that.
You have to kind of strike a balance there, right? Between, you know, what is going to be maybe too much for a young audience and what is.
Well, and I don't know if you.
Just enough to intrigue them.
It still needs an edge for sure.
Yeah.
You have to have like, well, why are we here? You know, why is this interesting? And danger is exciting. But I think the trick is presenting it in a way that doesn't exploit them with it or compromise their innocence.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So you already talked about what you've taken away from the project. So I'm going to lean into, is there a story you're itching to tell next? What's your next project?
Oh, that's Ooh. A good question. You know, I always say it's too early to tell, but there's a project that I'm in pre-production on it.
Okay.
And I'm finishing revisions to the third act. Which I need to finish. That's what I said. I'm right. I need to get that done. But we're planning to. It's called. I shouldn't say the name.
Don't say it.
I won't say the name.
But it's out there.
It's a Mr. No, we haven't. We start shooting end of July.
Okay. That's
yes.
fine.
Wow. And it's a kids detective thriller, like Ooh. Boxcar Children, but a little more intense.
Okay.
I
film.
Love the boxcar
and it's very. Children, it's yeah. very. That's all I'll say for now before I blow it.
Don't but blow it.
It's yeah. I hope to come back and talk with y'all about
it. I was gonna say you're gonna come back yes. and talk with us about yeah. the next time. Absolutely. So
it's very exciting. Yeah.
You're a pretty busy person. How do you find a balance there between your work and you've got young children and
yeah?
How do you find a balance?
In what way? Like
a work life balance. Yeah. Are you sleeping very much?
Well, yeah, that's tough with the littles. But, I think doing what you love is super important. And I think finding rhythms in it that keep it sustainable is important. I spent so many years on the road. Like when I started my career, I did a lot of commercials and documentaries, a lot for ESPN, National Geographic, Disney. It was such a grind, and like the first few years I was on the road 250 days per year, which is, you know, wow. that's like 20 yeah. days a month, like average, and sometimes gone like, you know, 6 weeks at a time. My suitcase was, it just had a permanent spot, you know, I lived out of it for yeah. like 2 years, and that, it's not an exaggeration to say that was destroying my marriage. I was a young, you know, man. We had a wedding, amazing wedding, honeymoon, and I was like, I'll see you later. Oh, I thought the trip, yeah, it trip moved up. I'll see yeah. you later. Mm-hmm. It was bad, and it took me like years and a lot of hard conversations for me to understand, not only is this not sustainable for me, this isn't sustainable for any meaningful relationship mm. that I'm ever going to be able to have. So I, early on too, like doing these commercials and starting to have kids, I had a lot of moments where it's like, do I want to get another pitch done, or do I want to get another round of it, or do I want to put my daughter to bed?
Yeah.
And early on, I remember saying at some point, I want to be a much better dad than I am a director. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seemed like an easy or obvious choice. I've always, I think, had a passion for family and doing the best I can as a father. There's a sign I have. I had it in my office, and now it's in my home office. This is great. It says, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.
That's it.
I think that's it. Mother Teresa. Yeah.
That's it right there.
Though a friend of mine was like, she didn't say that. Where'd you get that sign? And then I felt embarrassed. I'm like, I don't know. It was on Etsy.
We love Etsy.
It was $19 on Etsy. I thought it was cute. But isn't that sweet?
It is sweet.
And I think that what that does is it changes you.
It does. Words change yep. you. You read it. It meant mm-hmm. something. And look at you now.
And well, but the act. Yeah. Well, yeah. The sign. but the act itself of like going home to love your family is now like, well, now my career is not. It's not about me. You know. And now this hustle and grind. Like mm-hmm. this isn't. It's clearly like yes. There's excitement and fulfillment and joy and hard work and in creating things. Like, I think that's such an important part of who we are is yes. making things that are good and beautiful. But you get, man, it can kill you. You can get lost in it. So you have to be able to just step away from it. And, mm-hmm. and I'm a work in progress. Let me tell you that too.
Oh, we all are a work in progress yeah. too. Yeah. And it sounds like you have a pretty supportive wife to help yeah. you with all of that stuff too.
It's beautiful.
So yeah. you have a lot of passion yeah. for your work too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that helps.
Absolutely. One of the big things about doing Stolen Valley, which was a more mature audience, you know, action neo-Western, mm-hmm. to now doing this PG family fantasy film, is I have been able to share it with my kids who are yeah. getting older. And they were 6 and 4 when I did Stolen Valley, so they didn't quite get what was going on. But now they can really, like, how can we help work and how yeah. can we help prep for this? And
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a family thing.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It
That's
is.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And they'll remember this, though.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So, Jesse, tell our audience here how they will be able to check this film out.
Well, this film, Wild Man, will come out in theaters on August 1st, but you'll be able to see it everywhere on September 30th. And that's when it'll be on Apple TV and Amazon Prime and Google Play. From there, it'll go to other streaming services, potentially, depending on how the theatrical release goes. So it may be a thing that's up on Netflix or Peacock or, Disney even. It gets pitched to all of them. Most of them are doing their own content now. So it's really, tough to, you have to have, offer something to the platform, with, usually with cast or based on a certain level of book or something like that. So those aren't super likely, but that release on September 30th, where you can buy or rent the film, that's what we're super excited about, because that's going to put it just everywhere across the United States. We had two sold out showings of our first premiere down in Franklin. The audience responses have just been, I've been shocked at how great they've been, honestly. People ecstatic about the movie and laughing and cheering and loving it. And so September 30th is the window we're super excited about, where everybody who's seen it and who cares about it can share it with their friends and send it out and say, hey, check this out. It's fun, it's thrilling. And it's like a safe movie for families that your kids actually want to watch.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to wear their hat, because that's going to be my talking point.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Wild Man.
Wild Man.
I thought that's kind of a cool hat.
I love it's a cool one. I think so.
That was also on Etsy. Yeah.
Shout out to Etsy.
Yes. Thank you, Etsy, for sponsoring this podcast. You can send the check to 322.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, well, Jesse, thank you so much for being here. And I encourage our audience and our listeners to check out The Wild Man of Shaggy Creek.
Yes.
And also, if you'd like to hear more from Jesse, you can check out our earlier episode of Written in the Stars, where we had Jesse on. He talked about The Stolen Valley. Mm-hmm. So feel free to check that out to our listeners. And thank you, everybody, for being here. Thanks for listening.
Yeah,
thank
this was
you.
Awesome. Thank
yes.
you all so
Alrighty.
Much. Thank you.
You have been listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. Visit lcc.edu/library to find the titles discussed in this episode. You can find previous episodes of Written in the Stars and other LCC Connect shows at lccconnect.com. In the words of Miguel de Unamuno, I hope, reader, we shall meet again and we shall recognize each other.